The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Tēnā koutou katoa, no mai haramai ki Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast. We're here to talk to you about the cultural, social and political role of food in Aotearoa and break bread with some of the buzzy people in the local scene. Ko Simon Day tēnei, and as always, in the studio with me today is Alice Neville, the Spinoff's food editor.
Kia ora, Simon.
And Sophie Gilmore, New Zealand's best home chef.
Thanks, Si.
I love when she looks up at me like, what the fuck is he going to say
What's
this
he going
to
say this time?
What incorrect tagline is he coming up with this week?
We've Food got boss. A really special episode for you today, a little bit experimental, a lot of hard work for our homie Tahi on the boards. We went on a field trip to Kingi, the seafood-focused restaurant on the ground floor of Hotel Britomart, and had a cooking lesson from head chef Tom Heeshon. And we're shown around the prep kitchen, their new space, their new event space on the first floor, the libraries, really, really stunning. And we also got to look into, I think I named it the Fish Library.
I thought that's what it was called, but you know, you can claim that.
I'll claim it. I came up with it on the spot.
God, it was good.
Which was a really, really beautiful vision into the care and love they have for their produce, but we will talk about that later. But before we do, a little bit of shameless self-promotion. It's August, and that means Visa Wellington on a Plate is in full swing. And this year, Dietary Requirements is an official participant. On August 15, we are hosting a live session of the podcast at Parrot Dog's Brewery in Lyle Bay, one of my favourite spots to have an afternoon beer and some food. We'll be there from 3 till 5 p.m. doing a couple of sessions. The first is a chat with Matt and Matt from Parrot Dog about their 10 years in the game. Their 10th birthday happened just last month, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then we will be talking about the future of hospitality, taking an issue that's sort of been really big at the moment and looking at where the pain points are, what some of the solutions are, and what the future could look like. It's going to be really, really fun. It's free. Show up, bring your mum, bring your son, and have a really nice afternoon with the three of us.
Bring your dog.
We'll be signing autographs.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun.
Same.
And we got 3 days in, or I've got 3 days in Wellington. You have more?
I've got like 5 days in.
Yes,
good
girl.
Old Te Whanganui Ātara.
Yeah, I think I'm going to just snatch 48 hours,
yep.
But I'm going to give it everything.
It's Beavana weekend, so it's a perfect hair of the dog. Is come have a beer at Parrot Dog and listen to us talk shit. So I really, really enjoyed the trip to Kingi. It's not often you get to hang out with a really great chef in such close proximity and learn about their craft. And I learned so much from like start to finish, like where the fish come from, how they look after it, how to cook it well. And it was just really fun.
I reckon it was also such a good example of how the story makes you like the restaurant more, like the people
totally,
behind
yeah.
it, their philosophy. Because I've been to Kingi and I enjoyed it, but after spending time with Tom and understanding more about what they do and tasting that flounder dish, I'm absolutely dying to go back.
Mm. Yeah, I've interviewed Tom before a few years ago when he was, before Kingi existed, about his like philosophy around sustainability, particularly with seafood. And Yeah, he's a very knowledgeable and interesting guy to talk to about that stuff.
I found him quite a calming influence as well.
Yes, he's got quite a zen.
Totally. Well, the industry is really hectic at the moment. Yeah. Like, there's a massive staffing crisis, and everyone I see is feeling like stressed and overwhelmed. And Tom just felt really calm.
Chill vibes.
Nice. I think he was at his best in that environment as well. Yeah. Chefs can be a little bit guarded or a little bit apprehensive about hanging out with the media. And instead we were hanging out with him in his safe space. So it worked really, really well.
I mean, what a space as well. So beautiful.
So cool, yeah.
So we started in a chiller where Kingy hangs and dries all its fish. And I guess we'll let the audio do the talking, because it was really cold and really beautiful in there.
Yeah, so just I guess when we were putting the plans and concept together for Kingy, obviously storage space is pretty key, you know. So I really wanted to have a designated space for hanging all our line called fish.
How good does it look?
We've got the flounder, which we're going to cook today. All these fish are caught mostly from up in Lee and out of the Parapet Gulf on small day boats.
I was really lucky to spend a morning out on In Excess, a Lee Fisher and boat.
Oh, cool, yeah.
And it was...
It's the boat called In Excess. I love it!
The skill and care for the way they catch it and then the way they treat it afterwards is insane.
It is. Yeah, so we get a lot of our fish from In Excess. Someone's kahawai might be, and snapper that we see here. But they are, it's such a hard job what they do. And the amount of care that they kind of put into, you know, harvesting and protecting their own resources is really cool. So it's.
And are these dry aging, or is this just how you're storing them?
Both. That's it's a dry aging room.
For anyone that's listening, they're immaculately lined up and hung up.
Yeah, and they're all sort of hanging, I guess, intact, so they've got their skin on, guts out, and what that does is it's sort of like if you were, I guess, dry aging a piece of, you know, like a quarter of a cattle beast or a lamb, it slowly removes moisture, which intensifies flavour.
Yeah.
So,
do you age all your fish?
We store it like this. We age the kahawai for up to 10 to 12, 14 days sometimes for our raw kahawai plate. And then it's just the way that we store fish. It means that we go through, you know, a lot of fish each week. So it just keeps the fish in pristine condition. They're kind of, they're not lying flat. You know when you catch a fish or you get given a fish? They go all sludgy and get rigor mortis and... In this way, it sort of is a really nice way to work with fish.
The kahawai plate, is that, like, would you say it's part cured? By then, if you've got 12 days of air in the fridge, does it make a difference? Or does it still taste really fresh?
Still tastes really fresh. It's probably just the complexity of flavour that you get and how it breaks down when you're eating it.
Right.
It's just really delicate and... delicious to eat.
Is this your happy place, this little room?
Yeah, but it is very cold. It's about 2 degrees, so I can't spend too much time in here. But it's really nice to come in here and just see all the different people that we support and work with through the restaurant, see their product in here.
Yeah.
And it's an inspiring place to be. We've got, what have we got? We've got some beautiful speared butterfish up here.
Yeah, I was going to ask what that is.
So that's a reef fish, and there's a couple of guys in New Zealand that have permission from the NPI and the government to spear these. So each fish is literally being,
individually shot.
Yeah, with a spear from a spear diver. The guy, his name's Dwayne, he's in Bluff, and he goes out once or twice a week and yeah, just goes around the rocks. And
how many do you get from it?
Oh, we try to get about 10 or 20 kilos a week. And,
yeah.
They're just sort of piloting the idea, but it's amazing because it's individually selected, so he can kind of see the size of the fish. There's no bycatch, obviously. There's no, you know, there's no harm on the environment. The seabed floor is intact. And
I've never seen a butterfish before.
Yeah,
they're so black.
They're a beautiful fish. They're
beautiful.
The reason you don't see them commercially or on many menus is because they're really hard to catch. They're vegetarian, right. So they just eat kelp and seaweeds. And that's probably why they're so dark in colour as well, because their environment.
We've been talking a lot on the podcast about the value of food and how people don't always understand the investment that's made in its production, its catching in this case, and its presentation. I think that's a really great example of the care and skill and time and effort that's gone into getting this amazing product, you know, one at a time for you.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's it has to just be a way that of the future that we integrate in a commercial sense, because there's no reason why more restaurants can't source fish like this. So I think that's definitely one of the solutions in terms of creating more of a sustainable food chain in terms of the way that we harvest seafood and protect stocks really. And
are we taking a flounder off the rack, or have you got one ready to go?
We do have one ready to go that I'm just bringing up to room temperature out here. But yeah, these flounder are they're all from the Kaipara Harbour, and they're caught by a guy called Peter Yardley, who's been fishing on the Kaipara for I think close to 30 or maybe even over 30 years now. So we're cooking whole flounder today.
So we all had to leave the fish library because Simon was cold. Honestly, I was buzzing out. I could have stayed in there for ages because, firstly, I've never seen a butterfish, like a glossy black fish.
So black.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And
yeah.
Secondly, I was wearing a lot of warm clothes, so I was all good. But I like, there's something just so refreshing or pleasing about things that are lined up in perfect order.
Yeah.
And they had like the S-shape metal hooks with the fish up the top and then a fish hanging off the next fish.
Yeah,
we've got some photos somewhere.
It was lovely, and I liked how they were all had little tags with the date they were caught on, and it was all very calming and chaos-free.
And Tom knows the names of the fishermen that catch a lot of the fish.
Yeah.
We learned about the difference between long lining as opposed to netting.
Yeah.
We learned I'd never heard the term bycatch before.
Hadn't you?
So, no. But I think
that it's the big issues, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the issue for those other people that may not know.
Yeah.
I was obviously the rookie in the room.
One of the good things about long lining is a lot of the fish bycatch, the fish that you don't want, that is hooked, can be returned to the sea still alive.
Yeah, but he said anything, it's also includes seabirds, and there's a bunch of damage that's done to other natural life other than the fish that you're trying to catch. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, that's sort of stuff with the Maui dolphin and, you know, the netting, occasionally they get caught in there. So that's not ideal.
Yeah. And it sounds like the Kaipara Harbour has a beautiful bounty of all things fish.
It does, yes. That's where the flounder that we cooked came from.
Okay, so then we got to watch Tom prepare the fish for us.
I'm not sure if it gets included in the clip or not, but I reckon the most underrated piece of kitchen equipment you can have is scissors.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was, I thought that was some sort of like chef techie term that I, technique that I hadn't realised, but Tom started by cutting with scissors the fins and the tail off the flounder, but it was to make it fit in what was probably the world's most beautiful copper fry pan.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very soothing to watch as well, slicing off the
I know the calm with which chefs
something very calming about that whole experience.
The meat that they're working with is pretty amazing. I learned so much as well. Like a really important tip was to ensure that fish you're serving on the bone is cooked all the way through. It's going to stick to it as you try to peel it off the frame or actually even just peel the frame away once you've finished the top side, and never can you have too much butter.
Yeah, I think that was interesting, the comment that Tom made about how you can see when something is that's on the bone is cooked well because it starts to lift off the bone. Mm-hmm. And he was saying the same thing about, I remember at cooking school when they were teaching us to roast potatoes or make potato chips in the oven, hand cut, that the the answer to when the potato is ready is when it's lifted itself off the baking sheet. So there's a bit of an exercise of patience because then you get the best end result. And also that he said you cook about, I can't remember, but let's say 7 minutes on one side, 3 on the other, like you would a steak as well, because you get something to cook and crisp on the bottom and cook almost all the way through and then just turn it and finish it.
I've found it really interesting working a lot more with iron pans recently. It feels like your steak might have stuck, or your chicken thigh is stuck to the pan, whereas you're so used to just sliding around on Teflon. But what it's doing is just building its crust, and like you talked about, when it releases itself, that's when you know that you've got that real nice crispy skin on your flounder or the nice crust on your steak.
Mm.
So I think, you know, we start with learning about how Sophie eats flounder all the time. See, I've never cooked flounder for myself, so now I'm going to.
It's not expensive. So if you
it's not hard either, but we'll talk about that in a second.
So if you go to the fish market in that second room where all the whole fish are.
This is the Auckland fish market.
Yes, sorry. Down at Wynyard Quarter. If you walk into that second room down the end where all the whole fish are, you can always get flounder. And it's, like you said, Simon, it's really, it sort of like punches above its weight in terms of how impressive it looks, because it's a white flaky fish, and it is best with a bunch of fat because that's what brings out its flavour. So basically you get to look like this fancy hero when you do it. I did it recently with beurre blanc and just poured it all over the flounder, and it's so yummy.
Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't ordered the flounder off your menu. I'm sort of a bit miffed with myself. As always, next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty... I still think it's quite an underrated fish. People maybe just being scared of how to approach a flounder. And I think that's kind of what we try and do here, is educate people about, you know, the best way to eat it. And
my dad used to flour and fry flounder for lunch at the weekend. It's like his... Yeah, my mum cooks the rest of the week, but it was like Saturday, go to the fish market, get flounder, flour it and fry it. But I actually haven't really seen it cooked any other ways.
Well, it is being a delicate flesh. It loves fat, so the way we'll cook it is in a pool of foam and butter. And
now you're talking.
Yeah. It's one of my favourite. Like, if there was a dish that I'd probably, you know, at last supper, yeah, it would be a whole flounder with some sourdough.
Yeah.
And it's super approachable to cook at home. Yeah, everyone's got, you know, if you don't have a big enough pan to cook the whole fish in, you can always, you know, roast it in a really hot oven as well.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, so in at Kingi, we cook this whole in the wood fire oven, and then the condiment that we're putting with it is the foaming butter with burn noisette, and we do that with crispy capers and curry leaves, and then a touch of lemon as well. Which is it's just a riff on a classic, really. Everyone's had, you know, flounder with capers and butter, but with the curry leaves, it kind of just gives it a different profile and nuance. Curry leaves with the butter is just it's delicious.
Would you say one medium flounder feeds 2 adults?
Yeah,
I
think
so. Or are we just pigs in my house?
Well, you know, I think it's being a whole fish. There's meat, you know, throughout
in
the head and around the wings, so. I would say 1 for 2 is a good amount. You know, if you incorporate a couple of side dishes or some bread. But, you know, people come here all the time and just order a flounder for themselves. And
I find myself eating a whole flounder to myself.
Yeah.
And do you serve it with, would you eat it with acid yourself? Like, I like it with a salad that's got vinegary leaves or something that a bit acidic as well.
Yeah, I think something to cut the butter is... it's pretty important.
Lemon juice does the trick, probably.
Yeah, a bit of lemon juice or, just a crunchy bitter leaf salad. Some veggies. It's pretty versatile, you know. Some people have it with fries and go pretty full noise on
it. It's quite a vibe with shoestrings.
And in the other direction, I feel like I'd have an equally buttery Chardonnay to go with it.
Mm. Yeah, loves a buttery Chard.
Or a freezing cold beer.
Yeah.
Yum. And why did you trim the fins?
We don't generally trim them, but again, we do them through the wood fire, so we cook them on a flat tray. But today we're going
to
do them in the
to make it
in
the pan.
So that would be the only reason why. And it does make it easier to turn as well. So if you're doing it at home, it's just to work with it. It's probably a little bit easier.
So Tom cut off the fins and the tail with scissors. I think an underrated kitchen tool. Sophie actually taught me the best way to carve a chicken is to cut it into quarters with scissors.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't have poultry scissors, but you can just use good kitchen scissors, can't you?
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
Also, how you've cut the tail off, when I've been doing it at home, sometimes you like leave it on to make it look beautiful, and then you go to flip it, and you're left holding the tail, and the fish doesn't flip properly. Oh. So it's probably like good to get it right.
Yeah, and it does really look beautiful when it is whole, and it's and all the fins kind of crisp up in that. But I think if you're a first time flounder cooker at home,
Go easy on yourself.
Yeah, that's easy.
Us, right? Three first time flounder cookers. Oh no, you've done it.
Sophie's in.
I cooked
flounder
quite a bit
the other
for
day.
Some reason.
I've never
done
it. Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
I think serving up a whole fish to guests, it just looks so impressive, no matter what it is.
See, I thought as well, and Sophie and I are about to have a debate, that it looked really easy to cook the flounder whole. So the Tom goes olive oil, fish in, pushes it down, gets the skin side really nice and crispy, flips it, pushes it down, like gets, you know, cooking through on both sides, and then dumps a whole lot of butter, a bunch of capers and some curry leaves. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah. Mm.
But is it the same way that, like, you know, Roger Federer makes tennis look easy?
I think, like, cooking a Scotch fillet perfectly looks quite similar to that, but how many times do you get a perfectly cooked one? Basically only in a restaurant.
Oh, fuck that. I am Scotch
okay,
fillet
Simon.
Mastered. I'm super proud of how infrequently I overcook a piece of steak.
Okay, what I would say is that there was more technique to it than perhaps how it looks, because yes, everyone can go through those motions, but the timing of it's really important. So he rubbed the fish skin with olive oil, and then he fried it for about 7 minutes, and he was pressing it down to make sure that the skin was frying. So we get that. And then he flipped it over. No flour required. So that's actually harder than flouring it and then frying it, because then the flour is what makes it crunchy. Once he turned it over and added all the butter, he waited for the butter to melt, and then he waited for the butter to froth, and then he basted the fish with it while it was frothy.
Oh my God, the sound. I just love the sound of the butter relative to the hard, like, cackle of the olive oil. It was like this warm, like, bubble.
Well, the butter goes from solid to liquid to frothy to browned. So then when he hit that beurre noisette, the brown butter stage, is when he then added the acid, and the acid was lemon juice. No, not lemon juice. He put capers and caper brine in.
He put lemon in.
No caper
and
brine.
And then that kind of emulsifies with the fat that's left over. So you probably just, if you tried to do it at home and fucked it up, you'd probably just get a watery sauce, which would still taste delicious.
Yeah. We are running the recipe on the site, so keep an eye out. Yeah, I reckon that beurre noisette would be easy to fuck up. I reckon I'd fuck that up. But, it's just butter. Maybe it's still
we have to watch it, and like Tom said, you have to listen to it.
Yeah.
Segway. Let's let the listeners listen to the bubbling butter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll heat the pan up. Cool. So I think just to start off with, we're just going to rub the flesh with a touch of oil and then give it a nice sort of heavy crust of flaky sea salt.
What sort of oil is it?
That's just olive oil. We do a lot of cooking with olive oil. I really like the flavour and also the colour that you get with it on fish. See the beautiful sort of yellow hue to the belly, the speckles.
So this is a yellow belly flounder, right?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
How many different varieties do we get in Auckland?
I'm not sure how many different species there are of flounder. I know there's, off the top of my head, there's about four or five.
I was cooking flounder in like a high country station in the South Island the other day, and it was the same variety, so I guess this is the most popular.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's right. You can get it from right up north to the bottom of the south. But I think in terms of the Auckland fish market, the Kaipara is where most of it comes. I think it's the largest, it's one of the largest harbours in the southern hemisphere.
Is it?
Yeah. And I was talking to one of the fishermen earlier today just to kind of do a bit of fact checking, and he was saying that each high tide, or each tide, the equivalent of 2 square kilometres of water goes in and out the channel, which is nuts when you think about
what 1 square metre of firewood looks like.
Yeah,
it's like a trailer full of firewood.
Yeah, that's
2 kilometres of water.
Yeah, two square kilometres.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we scoop it up.
Wow, that's quite the glug.
Yeah, we start off with a little bit of olive oil. We'll just sort of slowly warm that up.
How long do you do it each side?
Yeah, I reckon a couple of minutes on the first side.
Yeah.
I always seem to go longer on the first side, and then as a rule of thumb, like 70% on the first side and 30% on the other.
That's a good tip.
Anything
like
with skin.
Yeah.
And then you get a really beautiful kind of, you know, caramelization and colour on that first sort of presentation side, or. So, I mean, a little tip, reason we salted heavily was just to stop it sticking to the pan. And you'll know it's ready to flip when you can kind of just, when it's just free from the pan, there won't be any part of the fish that's kind of resisting. So you can typically just pick it up from the tail and turn it over like that.
And no flour needed.
No, we don't use flour. I mean, you can do.
Beautiful.
So I think that's probably another key is to, you know, really make sure you kind of overindulge in the butter, because you really want it swimming or cooking in that. It's like a foaming sea of butter. And you probably can't have too much butter. So if you think you've got enough butter, add a bit more.
That's what people don't realise, is why does the food in restaurants taste so good? It's because of the sauces, and they're made with lots of butter.
And the salt.
And the salt, yeah.
You should be able to listen to the foaming butter, and if you go up close, you kind of, it's a really nice sound, like it, you can tell that, you know, it's all ticking away nicely.
It's such a different sound to 2 minutes ago when it was
it's quite aggressive,
frying aggressively in olive oil. Now it's kind of a gentle, bubbling bath.
Yeah, it's like a trickling stream.
Animal bath.
Look at the colour as well, like it's changing that nice, beautiful golden hue now. Another good sign that capers are starting to open up and blister. Another good sign that we're starting to caramelise the milk solids.
How cold was the butter that you put in?
It was just room temp.
Okay.
You can use fridge cold, but.
Doesn't need to be.
I don't think so, no.
How good does that look?
So I'm just going to pop that just to sort of finish off on the oven. And more or less it's kind of 80% there. We're just going to let it rest out now and cook through. You never really want to serve an undercooked flounder because it's on the bone.
Does it come off?
Yeah, it doesn't come off the bone. And that was also why I pulled it out of the fridge earlier as well. If you take it straight from the fridge, the last thing that's going to heat up is the bone. So if you're working with a room temperature fish, it's just a lot easier. Cooks through more evenly and consistently. That's a good tip. So after a couple of minutes, we'll just pull that out. I'd say that you wouldn't really want to take the butter any further than that. You're just sort of starting to see around the edge the milk solids have caramelised to a point where they're kind of that biscuity brown. And that's perfect. That's what we're after. So at that point there, I'm going to add in curry leaves. Right at the end there, and they'll sort of
What an absolute vibe.
Yeah.
I love curry leaves.
Yeah, it is so fragrant. And any fat's a great vehicle for that.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to get them to that point where they kind of curl up, and that means they're sort of fully cooked through. And then that's the garnish for the fish as well.
Yeah, yum.
So then we'll slowly start spooning them on. And then right at the end, after the leaves are on top, we're just going to glaze the pan with a touch of lemon juice. So just add that back to the heat. You want the juice to reduce enough that the sugars in the juice caramelise. So that's what we're looking for now.
You kind of do a second sauce with the lemon juice.
Yeah, it's right at the end. Touch of that. And now it's kind of got that glossiness to it from the juice from the May lemon. Also, we'll get a plate for that.
Oh, yeah.
And then the best part of all, not only did we get to watch and learn from Tom, we got to eat the fish. And it was so fucking good. It was a real privilege to sit down on a Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock and get your hands covered in butter. I don't know why I chose to eat it with my fingers.
I sort of felt a bit of a sense of that too. Like, do I deserve this?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like very treat.
Very
indulgent,
that's the word I was looking for.
I really loved the introduction of curry leaves, and I've been getting into cooking with curry leaves lately. So I would highly suggest that anyone that's planning to cook this recipe from the website does that with curry leaves.
I'm going to use them on heaps of stuff now as well. They add a really beautiful texture, like this crispiness to it.
When they're fried, yeah.
Reminds me of deep frying a sage leaf or something as well.
Yeah, like pasta, yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking of before with the brown butter, is that if you're making a pasta sauce as well, you have to cook the butter longer than you think. It's after it's finished frying, before it's about to burn, is like the sweet spot.
I was thinking about what the curry leaves added, and a depth of flavour was the three words I came up with. And I tried to work out what that actually means.
Mm.
And it reminded me of
it's quite a savoury note, curry leaves.
And a length to the mouthfeel. Like, because it's such a delicate fish, it is, you know, it needs that butter, it needs that fat to bring out the flavours. But then what the curry leaves did for me was, like, there was this secondary experience of flavour in my mouth. They came through and made the whole mouthful last and made it so much more complex with such an easy technique addition.
It's like the bay leaf challenge that we did on the podcast, because I would say that eating the actual curry leaf, totally do that, delicious, crunchy, but it almost adds more depth of flavour, like an anchovy or a bay leaf, than the thing itself. It's got kind of a greeny, slightly woody, just quite savoury flavour, but I think it makes it feel really, it's a depth of flavour thing. Mm.
And I loved being able to eat with Tom as well. You don't often share a feed with a chef.
Yeah, he wasn't like, oh, I'll leave you guys to and rush off to it. Yeah, right, it was nice that he sat down with it.
And right that he served it with just a baguette, a warmed up baguette.
So and also ate himself. Like, his portion was as big as anyone else's. He loves eating.
I think he was just honing the fish heads. He gave us all the fillets.
Yeah.
And said he loves the roe as well. I always serve fish like that with green vegetables or with salad, with something quite acidic. So it was actually a good time getting the bread out and mopping up the juices.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
it's like an obvious thing to say.
Just dipping it straight into the pan, because that was the cool thing as well. And something that I will do when I cook this for people is just take the pan straight out onto the table and drop it there.
Yeah.
And you sort of, there's that real skill to slicing off the fillets that Tom taught us as well. So gently pull them away from the backbone as you go under them. And then I love ripping the frame off and dumping that sort of on the table as well.
That looked so satisfying.
And it's just, it's quite, you know, there's a lot of mana coming with putting a whole fish down on the table.
Well, I did a cooking class, a fish head soup one with Peter Gordon at Homeland recently, and I'm not squeamish about ingredients in the kitchen, and one of the things we had to do was use our hands to get all the meat off the head of a massive harpooka, and there was so much
meat
on them.
Heaps of meat, yeah.
So I think that's going to become more and more of a thing, right? Because unless you're making good use of the fish head,
yeah,
it's a really bad idea to be throwing them out.
Do you eat fish much at home, Alice?
Not in my own home, because I just have always cooked vegetarian, so I just kind of do. But I eat fish at my parents' house a lot because my dad cooks so much fish, and I eat it when I go out for dinner. I should cook it more at home.
See, I almost exclusively eat it when I go out because I feel like I'm... I don't know. It sometimes feels too hard. Too.
I think your wife
thought.
Doesn't like fish.
It doesn't. That doesn't matter to me.
I'm pretty sure that would be a reason you don't cook it much for dinner, though, right?
She can just have the salad.
Speaking of the fish heads, I recently gave Ginny Grant, who's been on our podcast before, who's a food writer, 10 snapper frames from my dad. And she was just going to make heaps of stock, but she was like, oh, my God, there was so much meat on them that she made all this, like, she made, like, a fish head tureen and... Yeah. Fried, deep-fried wings, and then had me around for a fish feast.
I think it's kind of, well, it's topical for me because I've decided to eat more fish. It's quite easy not to because I don't go to the supermarket a lot. And if you do go to the supermarket, you'd have to be eating the fish that night, really.
Yeah.
But you can.
Supermarkets are getting really good at providing much fresher fish.
Well, and you can ask them.
New World Bortley Fisheries. So there's a real investment in providing better, more sustainable, fresher fish at supermarkets.
Well, and at Faro, you can ask them when it's come in, or you can, like, for a catering gig before, I've phoned them and they've put aside a whole side of salmon. And they're really honest. They're like, are you eating it raw or are you going to cook it? And if you're eating it raw, they say, come back tomorrow, like, just before you need it, and we'll have it fresh. But I think I got out a Jamie Oliver cookbook at the weekend because I'm kind of keen to up my fish game. And he does a really good, his books often have like a big section of fish and all the different types of fish. Like obviously it's different in the UK, but last night I made Sarah Tuck's book, Coming Unstuck,
yeah.
The first one, has got this epic fish curry recipe in it, and it literally takes 10 minutes. You just heat up some coconut milk with some aromatics, and then you slide the fish in at the last minute.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And it's a really good way to get lots of green veggies in. Like last night I did bok choy, spinach and peas, and it's in this like quite watery broth.
Mm.
But I think that's a good way to use the lesser known fish as in a curry.
Yeah.
Monk fish would go great in that.
That's what I had last night, yeah. It's like $2 a portion too, guys. Get into it.
It's good to use. My dad has so much fish in the freezer, and curry's good to use that for a fish that's been frozen as well.
Well, and I noticed Jamie Oliver does stuff like gets a red curry paste from the supermarket and will rub it all over a fish and then bake it in a parcel with some greens. Yeah. It's like so easy but so yummy.
Something I saw on food television probably decades ago now that I've always wanted to do is someone cooked a whole salmon in the dishwasher.
What?
So you almost,
I mean,
like,
I'm not surprised, but that's not what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
Almost like you would with a normal one. You cover it in herbs and season it and then wrap it up in tin foil.
And just put no soap in. No,
you definitely don't put soap in. You might even want to run a cycle first, yeah. Soap free.
No, like, I get it. I'm just clarifying that it would just be like a hot, steamy, watery bath for your fish.
Exactly. It's like a hot, steamy, watery bath for your fish. Maybe like what could you put in there instead of soap to help like season it?
You put some curry leaves in the thing
throw
and close it.
Curry leaves in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's also key to wrap it in tin foil.
You'd want
to
wrap it up quite well.
You would want to wrap it up quite well, and we're almost due to wrap up, but you get to hear us have a chat with Tom while we eat and learn about his own passion for fish, one that we clearly are catching on to because that chat was nice.
Catching on to, get it?
Ooh,
also, is this an episode where we get to broadcast eating noises? We normally try and avoid them for the listeners, but perhaps not this time.
You know, I think we've already lost those people who have a phobia of it anyway.
Hopefully everyone just feels motivated to go and buy some flounder or other whole fish and give it a go.
Yeah, or if you can't be bothered, just go to Kingy and order the flounder.
Yeah, he said people order a whole flounder to themselves.
Mm.
And also said that shoestrings are quite a nice accompaniment, which I think sounds like quite a vibe.
Shoestrings are a good accompaniment to pretty much everything.
Yeah, probably.
Thank you so much. I love ordering flounder, but I always find it quite stressful having to do the, like, I'm scared I'll fuck it up, the actual servings, or like if someone else does it.
A simple way to kind of approach it
is just run your a knife down the spine of the fish.
Yeah.
And the flesh should just, you know, pop away from the bone, kind of see in there. And then you can just run down the skirt of it as well. And then, yeah, just spoon kind of all those delicious crispy capers and leaves on top of that. We've got some warm bread here as well.
That second, this bit gets me quite often.
The skirt, yeah. And I mean, you can kind of run your fingers through that later on, and I love picking at it. This used to be kind of something we do once a week growing up, go out to Reedy Beach, just eat everything. I love the roe as well. I think not many people eat the roe, but I think Alice would put a wee bit of roe there.
Ooh, lovely. Do you go floundering up here?
Not so much because I don't really have a net. Mm.
So my marae is right on the Kaffir Harbour. So this is
So that's a great
my tūranga waiwai or food
up there. Yeah. Well, there's still a lot of people floundering down there.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, yeah.
Oh wow.
Curry leaves are so good. Skin's delicious.
It is, yeah.
Maybe just we should make a rule that no one should come to Kingi without ordering this.
Mm.
That's problematic because I feel the same way about the blue cod ones. And I guess those are two compulsory dishes at start and middle of your meal.
Those are not mutually exclusive. Absolutely delicious. Do you cook fish at home a lot?
Yeah, quite a lot.
There's something about the subtlety of the flounder and its delicateness that goes so well with the butter.
Yeah, well, I think like it needs the butter because it is a delicate, you know, fish. There's not a whole lot of fat in the flounder, so
I'd be interested in what steamed flounder would taste like because I've only ever had it with shitloads of butter.
Yeah,
but also I liked that the curry leaves absorbed the lemon juice too, so they're like crunchy and lemony.
That's right. Yeah.
Curry leaves are so good. Curry leaves and capers.
I love that. That's so simple.
Yeah,
does involve, you know, like some smart techniques.
Mm.
You know, if you cook that for friends at home, you'd feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, and it's so doable for people at home. You know, it's one of those dishes that once you do nail it, you can just do it time and time again, and you don't have to rush it. It's kind of like a slow, gradual process. But if you're entertaining, you know, you can just kind of stand there with a glass of wine and talk to your mates and. There's not a whole lot of prep that goes into it either. You just...
You look really impressive with minimal effort.
Well, it's just good produce, you know, and we're doing, you know, applying a couple of nice, simple techniques and letting the rest kind of speak for itself.
Where do you buy a flounder? Fish market?
Yeah, I think the Auckland Fish Market would be your best bet.
Good fishmonger, my boy Ray, at the Parnell Farmers Market.
Yeah, it's gone up in value a lot as well, just from popularity. And
yeah, is it quite expensive to buy?
It's around 20. We buy it for around $20 a kilo.
Oh yeah,
which isn't super expensive, but it's, you know, probably a similar price to what we pay for, you know, whole snapper or.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's a good sign, you know, and more people are eating it. There's more demand, and it's in terms of its reproduction, how quickly it replenishes and grows. It's super fast growing. I think it grows sort of between 20 and 30 centimetres a year, so it's a sustainable option to sort of purchase and eat.
Thank you so much for having us, Tom. It was a beautiful fish, beautiful space, and really, really fun. I can't wait to cook that for someone important.
thanks for coming, guys. We really it's been great to have you here and show you around what we're doing and what we're all about, so cheers.
So heaps of appreciation and thanks to Tom and the team at Kingi for having us.
Thank you. We loved it.
Highly recommend Hotel Britomart as a staycation if you're in Auckland or a vacation if you're not. It's vibrant down there at the moment. It's a really wonderful part of the city. And if you paid enough for your room, you get to take your book down and use the libraries, use that space to just hang out and enjoy it. And make sure you order the flounder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep. I can't wait. Booking this week.
Final reminder, August 15, Visa Wellington on a plate. Parrot Dog Brewery.
Simon's Pig celebrity moment.
I'm a little bit nervous that no one's going to show up.
Simon thinks he's the headliner. I've got at least on a plate.
I've got at least like three or four friends who are coming. That's heaps.
I got
maybe five. Yeah,
do you reckon we should do some like dummy calling around just to make sure that if the seats are empty?
No, I've done it already.
Just jokes. It's going to be fucking oversold.
It's going to be packed.
There's going to be people there just drinking beer anyway who will just be like, oh, didn't know this was happening.
They
but we'll pretend.
Yeah. We'll clear the room.
We're like a real bad song by a DJ, just like dance floor clears.
I was thinking we're like a bad mix of humble and arrogant. It's going to be packed, but we're also not sure whether anyone's going to come. So if you guys could come, that'd be great.
I'm definitely not very humble. But as always, it's been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for your help, Tahi, on both the field record and looking after us today.
Thank you.
Sign up to Spinoff members. Subscribe to all the Spinoff Podcast Network's podcasts. Shout out to Haz Beats on our intro and outro music. And we'll see you all in Wellington on August 15. Sophie hasn't booked her flights yet. They're still cheap, apparently. It's not too late to fly down to see us.
Or up, if you happen to be in the South Island.
Alice, you're so aware of all these things. Such a beautiful editor.
It's
great.
It's nice. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, too.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.